And a good Monday morning, everybody. Welcome into Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chase McCabe in today for Robbie Stanley, alongside Joe Rex Road and Nick Keezer on the ones and twos. Hope you're having a fantastic start. Rex Road, what's up? How are you?
I'm good. Chase, how are you?
You know, I'm fantastic. A little tired. You know, had to pinch hit this morning, but happy to do so. And so we keep it going. Where are you? Are you in Knoxville?
Or yes, I am.
Okay.
Oh yeah, I'm in Knoxville. Yeah. Late night getting out of the park last night. After I gotta say, did anybody hear Tony Vitello's postgame presser? Either of you guys hear that last night?
Oh yeah.
You heard like the whole thing.
Not all of it, but I heard all the starting off there, Joe.
Yeah. Okay, good. Because that's one of those things. I think I
did not, so I need to be enlightened here.
I might give Vitello my rant. I think that might be the thing to do today. Like I think it's actually worth playing his whole opening statement. It's one of the weirdest press conferences I will ever be at in my life.
So was it prompted,
bar none.
Was it prompted by a question, or he just kind of went into this diatribe?
It was prompted by yesterday. It was prompted by the day before. So he started and he said, said something like, you guys made a mistake, give me a microphone. So basically, long story short, and again, we can get more into it later, but after their loss to Evansville, a TV reporter here in Knoxville asked Blake Burke basically like, you know, about the pressure of if you lose tomorrow, it's not a successful season. Vitello immediately was like, oh, it's a successful season. Of course, Twitter went nuts with that, but that obviously had him stewing for a day. And I mean, it's truly like, it's like, this is one of these things that scientists may study, this opening statement that he gave last night. Cause it was all over the place. I don't understand a lot of it, but the whole time we were sitting there, like, what is happening? It was something else.
So I think we have some of it, I almost called you Dr. Crane. I'm going to do that. I promise you that's going to happen at some point today that the reporter has. So this was a snippet of the opening remarks by Tony Vitello.
For me, success is part group. When our group has success, I consider myself a teammate to these guys. It means I had a level of success. But then there's also the part where I got a job to do and I got to make decisions. And if you were to put all my decisions in a bucket for the weekend, I had more wrong decisions than correct decisions. For instance, Dalton Bargo probably should have pinch hit yesterday. He showed me that with some attitude and some success today, and I'm not so sure he doesn't do it yesterday too if we pinch hit him against Harris, because he wants to go home and he's going home. But you know what, Bargs? Success for me is being a good teammate, and Cal Stark is my guy. That's my guy for a lot of reasons, no doubt. So success for me is what I get to judge. If you're talking about success for this team, the one thing I stated after last season, because I'm in a bathroom crying with just a lot of emotions after we're able to beat Clemson last year, was to show up at work every day and get out of my car excited and to have fun and to be around people that want to be here and be in an environment that you're excited to get to every day. 100% success. Omaha is real fun to go to. If you don't play that well, it ain't that fun. But I don't really give a damn, to be honest with you. As a matter of fact, we kind of can pick up where Evansville left off. We're not supposed to win because the number one never wins. So house money. So I'm going to consider this even more of a success this year, but definitely because of that group in particular being the way they are. And the one thing I definitely want to say about Evansville, Mr. Rumsey, Ty, I believe. I apologize if I got your first name wrong. Last out of the game. Not rubbing it in, not pointing fingers. All right, be told you never got to play in Omaha. You know what? Rumsey can get on a plane and go to Omaha anytime he wants. All right, that's easy to do. You know what's not easy to do? To run face first into a wall, full blast, get stitches, injure your shoulder, and then on top of that, to play in today's game. I've seen that guy. That guy made me nervous. I've seen a bunch of catches that guy made when we watched video. He made me nervous. So Omaha or not, who gives a damn? That guy is an absolute success. And when he's older, he'll be able to look everybody in the eye and say, when I played, I don't know what the hell his batting average is, I was a warrior, period, and a part of one of the best Evansville teams ever. And no one will ever be able to take that away from him. And every time he sees one of his teammates or goes back to that facility at Evansville, they'll say, hell yeah, there's that guy right there. So for me, it's a tangent, but that's what success is defined by me. I get to do it the way I want to do it. You guys get to do it the way that you want to do it. So at the end of the day, success for me is Omaha will be where Father's Day is for me.
Tony Vitello yesterday after the win and punching the Vols ticket to Omaha. So is that was what you were referencing?
And that was part of it. Yeah. That was probably some of the more understandable parts of it, but yeah, that was part of it. My favorite part was, you know, he went through success and Noah Webster, Webster's dictionary, and he was talking about Noah Webster and how what a great patriot he was, which is something we're losing today. I mean, it was something else. But yeah, look, I think the bottom line is the point for him is, you know, he defines success in different ways, and I think the reaction. The question, yes, to Blake Burke ticked him off, but I think the reaction, I mean, I don't know how much Tony Vitello does or doesn't, you know, spend time on social media, but certainly when he said that it's going to be a success either way, a lot of people went nuts on that. But a lot of them probably Vanderbilt fans, right?
Yeah.
I mean, Vanderbilt fans kind of had you know, some hope Saturday with Evansville's win in game two. that
sure.
Maybe the Vols were going to we're gonna cough it up for the second time in 3 years as the one seed. So yeah, it was something else, man. But yeah, all making for all kind of giving you a picture of it's just, you know, you got to pause right now and look at this program, 3 College World Series in 4 years, and it's just a different kind of deal. And that guy is really effective, you know, not just at like recruiting talented players and sending them out on the field. He always says that stuff, you know? Yeah. You know, he said that last night too. Like, yeah, what do? I just put Blake Burke in the lineup, you know? Yeah. But he puts these teams together, and I think he has a real knack for creating a fun and kind of wild atmosphere that obviously leads to a lot of success.
So this is what I'll say about Tony Vitello in particular, but I mean, I kind of think you see it in sports in general, that if, you know, and I'm not in it like you are, you know, you've obviously followed them pretty closely. You're there, you know, right now. But with him, I feel like his team is just an extension of him and his personality. And I think, like, you look at the Vanderbilt teams that have had success over the years, they're an extension of Tim Corbin and his personality. That typically happens when you have a successful program. You agree or disagree?
I think that's true. I think there's absolutely truth to that. You know, I also think, though, that certain players can still kind of like shape the identity of a team. So, for example, like 2 years ago, this was obviously an incredible team. And they weren't just the number one seed 2 years ago. They were like the clear favorite. They had everything, and Drew Gilbert and Jordan Beck, they were a really intense, in your face, trash talking kind of team, which I think a lot of people tied to Vitello. Now, he's intense, no question about it. We saw it last night. We see it in the games. But I think this team is more the personality of like Xander Seacrest and Kirby Connell. You know, Xander Seacrest had the performance of his life last night, and that is definitely more of a goofy, fun loving kind of team, and I think that's really more him. So I do agree with you, but I also think that, like, when you have great players or you have really strong personalities, if you're a coach, you hope that your guys kind of shape that, and it's not all coach dictated. Yeah. If that makes sense.
No, and I 100% agree with that, and I think they have those guys, and like Vanderbilt has had those guys, I mean, that have kind of had their own personalities that, you know, have helped shape the team. But ultimately, especially with the young guys, they kind of look at the coach, and, you know, the way that Tennessee has played, now they've acted like a number one seed this year, I think, but how they've played in the past, and they still have a little bit of that, is, and you just heard it in that rant, little chip on the shoulder, because they haven't done it yet. They've been to Omaha, but they haven't finished it. To use the wrestling analogy, they haven't finished the story yet. That's what they're hoping to do this year. And I love that. Like he had the comment of, oh, we're the number one overall seed, so everybody expects us to lose and not to win the whole thing. Like he's paying attention right to that stuff. I like that. Like he's got that, you know, mess around and find out mentality. And I think that that can be a very dangerous thing. Now, I was kind of with you. I didn't think they would lose a game before Omaha, so I was a little surprised by that. But I ultimately think that that could just add some fuel to their fire as they go into Omaha. You know, nothing really shocks me with Omaha, but when I look at this team and I watch how they're built and I watch how they're playing, I find it very hard to pick against them and say that anyone's going to knock them out in Omaha.
Yeah, look, I mean, I like their chances. I do think that, I think a huge key is Drew Beam. I mean, Drew Beam, you know, last night, like I said, Xander Sechrist has spent his career, you know, as a middle innings guy, you know, long reliever. And then this year, in part because of injuries and shuffling around, he gets an opportunity to start. He was incredible last night. I mean, if that's what they're going to get, he's never even pitched in Omaha. You know, Xander Sechrist is, I mean, he's not really a pro prospect. I mean, you know, they have a bunch of other pitchers who are, but he is just a battler. He's also, again, like, I mean, last night, some guys he was telling us after the game, some guys in the dugout were like, is Xander so goofy? He doesn't understand what's going on. Like they're like, this is just like a midweek game that you're starting, you know, like they, I mean, he's hilarious and he has that kind of, you know, persona, but Drew Beam is their ace and he has been struggling lately. And that's, to me, that's probably the biggest key in Omaha. Can Drew Beam get back to his best? Because they're going to, you know, they're going to absolutely need him. I assume he'll pitch in the second game either way. I assume Vitello will do it the same way. They do need him at his best, but they have a lot of arms and they have obviously, you know, right now the second most powerful team in college baseball history.
615-737-1025. That's our phone and text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. If you want to weigh in on the Vols headed to Omaha once again to compete for the national championship in college baseball, the College World Series. We'll continue that discussion coming up next, plus looking at the bracket and the challenge ahead for them. Chase McCabe in today for Robbie Stanley. It's Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, The Game. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, The Game. Chase McCabe in today for Robbie Stanley on this Monday, talking College World Series. Tennessee punches their ticket to the College World Series once again. And Joe, what does it say about college baseball to see the, you know, basically half the teams in Omaha represented by the SEC?
Yeah, well, so we are going to get an ACC SEC challenge, which is something else. There's one left to be decided, I believe, right? I believe
it's Georgia and NC State, right?
So either way, that's going to be the case. First of all, obviously the SEC is a dominant college baseball conference. You know, the ACC, the wild thing about that too is, you know, the preseason number one was Wake Forest, and I thought that this last weekend we would be watching, you know, Tennessee and Wake Forest go at it, and of course Wake Forest didn't even get out of, well, Wake Forest first of all had a disappointing season, couldn't get out of the East Carolina regional because of course Evansville did, but the SEC is an incredible baseball conference. I mean, what is the SEC best? Everybody thinks of the SEC as a football conference. I would argue that's definitely a better baseball conference. And you know, it's an amazing, it's the best football conference, but I would argue it's a better baseball conference. It might be a better women's basketball conference too. I mean, it's close.
Also, you're talking about right now.
Yeah. I mean, I'm talking about like just how many great programs are there, you know, in a particular sport in the SEC, but baseball, traditionally, now, I mean, you know, forever and ever, an incredible sport in the SEC. What's wild is that, you know, we're used to seeing some Big 12 representation you know, in Omaha. And of course, now you got Texas and Oklahoma coming to the SEC. So, you know, that's the SEC is going to have a monopoly, especially, of course, Texas is a great program. And by the way, there's some stuff on the internet about Tony Vitello going from one UT to the other, which I don't think is good information. But yeah, it's an incredible baseball conference, and it's going to be fun. Regardless of who wins today, Georgia or NC State, I think if Georgia wins, I think it'll be three AC. I know that it's three ACC and Tennessee on one side, and then I think on the other side it'll be three SEC and one ACC team. I believe that's right.
So yeah, well, you got Tennessee, Florida State in a game.
Right.
Did you mention Florida was on the other side?
Right. So Florida, and then so I guess so if Georgia wins, it'll be 2-2, right? Yeah. So because they've got or no, if Georgia wins, it'll be 3-1 SEC, right? Because you got Kentucky and Florida.
I think that's right. I'm trying to find an actual bracket. I'm just seeing.
I believe that's right. And of course, Kentucky, by the way, talking about like SEC base, I mean, you know, they're the darlings here. I mean, if there's a Cinderella story, and this is Kentucky was the only SEC school to not make it to Omaha. And now they have made it to Omaha by sweeping Oregon State in the Lexington Super Regional. And obviously they've had this kind of out of nowhere incredible season. That's one of the schools you don't think about when you think about great baseball. Georgia is also one of those schools, right, that you don't usually think about. Here and there they'll have a great team, but they may get there too. So it's also kind of the you know, the some of the SEC programs that you're not used to seeing. And by the way, Tennessee now 3 out of 4. Only Virginia can match that in the last 4 years. And you know, Tennessee all of a sudden has become a staple. It wasn't long ago Tennessee was that school like Kentucky or Georgia where it's like, oh my gosh, Tennessee has a good baseball team, but now we're getting used to it.
Okay, so
what? I don't know why that's happening. Sorry.
There we go. All right. I was, so, you know, you're not here, so I wanted to pull your beautiful face up on my iPad, so that's what that was.
Good. Well, that'll just brighten your morning, Chase.
It did. But I want to hit on something you said about the, you know, the SEC being, you know, more of a baseball school, or, you know, women's basketball, or, I mean, men's basketball is always well represented in the NCAA tournament. I think they have just shown why they're the dominant conference in college sports, because anything, I mean, they were well represented in softball. I mean, anything that matters, they're there, they have representation, and it's more than just one or two teams. Do you think, though, that now with the expansion of the college football playoff, that dominance is going to be even more prevalent?
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, the one thing to definitely hit on with this is, yes, men's basketball now is really strong. It wasn't long ago the SEC men's basketball was a laughingstock, right? I mean, that was a big push in the last, you know, 7-8 years, where they went through a stretch of it was like Kentucky and everybody else. You know, they've had those stretches, or they were getting three bids, and now there's so many, you know, competitive program. They've done a great job in that league of investing and trying to help them get more competitive. But yeah, to answer your question, I mean, look, I mean, the SEC and then, yeah, and the Big Ten. The Big Ten is right there and maybe better in some things. I mean, it's different too, right? Like the Big Ten has hockey, right? So,
yeah.
I mean, that's a huge sport up there. Whereas baseball in the Big Ten, like when I moved from Michigan here 8 years ago, you know, one of the things that first struck me was like, oh, well, they really, really care about college baseball here, like big crowds. And obviously you watch College World Series, so you knew that, but you still, when you see it up close, you realize the difference. Like up there, it's just, you'll have the random good team right here and there, but it's just hard to even have good programs with that weather. That's why it's all SEC and ACC teams in Omaha this year. But yes, now you add Texas, Oklahoma, and you're going to have the revenue disparity for the SEC and the Big Ten, those two, and it's going to be them and it's going to be everybody else. So I would have to imagine it would be just more dominance in more sports. Now, another thing, Chase, is if you get into this discussion, you get into what's everything going to look like with, employees, labor, contracts, and what will that do with the so-called non-revenue sports or the Olympic sports? I mean, how many of these sports are going to turn into possibly club sports? I mean, you know, that's something to keep in mind. But I mean, sports like baseball, basketball, football will not. So, and obviously those are the sports that, you know, have revenue and have, you know, fan bases, you know, that actually, you know, follow those teams regularly.
Yeah, and that's a good question. I mean, you know, the non-revenue sports, like what happens there? Now, I think with a lot of what we're talking about, they won't be affected, but it's certainly something to pay attention to as we go down the road. And, you know, but and how Greg Sankey wants to battle that as a commissioner and, you know, somebody that I think could even be in a higher position at some point in time once, you know, this is all said and done in the evolution of college sports, you know, with a super conference or what have you. But, you know, I guess we'll discuss that when that time comes.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, there's a lot of change coming. But whatever college sports looks like, it's going to be, you know, it's going to obviously start with college football, and the SEC and the Big Ten are going to be the two revenue drivers. But, yeah, the SEC right now is – because, look, the SEC is better than the Big Ten in men's basketball. Again, go back 7-8 years. It was complete reverse. But, you know, I think you do have to credit Greg Sankey, not just for, you know, whatever you think of, like, stealing Texas and Oklahoma and the cloak and dagger stuff and all of the uproar that caused, you know, in terms of just making sure the SEC is as strong in everything as possible. He's been awfully effective as commissioner.
Do you think, though, and you've covered this this conference and everything for a long time now, that, you know, when he first took over, everybody seemed to like him. He was everywhere. And I mean, he's still pretty visible, and accessible, but you know, I kind of felt like everybody's like, yeah, okay, Greg Sankey's this, we love Greg Sankey. And now he has a little bit of the evil emperor about him, where he's kind of made the turn to the dark side, maybe not on his, you know, his own, but just kind of the way that college sports has evolved. You think that that's accurate to kind of put it that way?
Yeah, I mean, the guy's sitting here talking about expanding the NCAA tournament and ruining it. I mean, yeah. And I understand he's not alone, and I understand that this is a TV driven thing and that TV rules the college sports world way more than it should, but I will blame him and look at him as Emperor Palpatine when he starts talking about the ridiculous idea of ruining a perfect sporting event. So that, like I said, Texas and Oklahoma. I mean, look, go back to, I mean, I've said this on the show before. I mean, I've got into a pretty significant argument with him a few years ago about NIL. And look, of course those guys are going to fight it, but he was dead wrong on that. So, yeah, I think especially with the Texas-Oklahoma thing, right? I mean, look, the Big Ten and the other leagues formed this alliance, and that, which, of course, did nothing. And then the Big Ten plundered the Pac-12 and killed it anyway. so we shouldn't put Greg Sankey on an island and say you are the villain. You know, I mean, this is college sports, and ultimately either you win or you lose, and he won when he got Texas and Oklahoma. But I think you're absolutely right, Chase, that the perception of his has changed, and I think there's a lot of fairness to that, and he better keep his hands off the NCAA tournament.
I 100% agree with you on that. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. I wasn't even a big fan of the play-in games and expanding to 68, but I've gotten used to it. So, but leave it alone.
Yeah. No, I will say, that's the thing. There's just so many different things going on with college sports. I do think that some of what's happening now with the portal, NIL, Congress, lawsuits, all of it, at least might delay that. So that's good. I think that's kind of, it's gone down the list of hot button issues, but when it comes down to it, like, they have to understand that, like, a crappy NC State or Florida, I understand that NC State made a run this year. So, okay, a crappy Florida State team that's like 11th in its league. Yes, it's a bigger fan base, And that's what TV people look at. But the reason we love the NCAA tournament is because we have St. Peter's. And we have, you know, Belmont have a chance to do something. I mean, it captures America every year. And if you just make it a Power Five tournament, you are going to lose a lot. And just there's some people who just don't seem to understand that and just want to look at numbers of fan bases.
100%. 615-737-1025, our phone and text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Coming up next, what team poses the biggest threat to Tennessee in Omaha in the College World Series? We'll discuss that coming up next. Chase McCabe in for Robbie Stanley today alongside Joe Rexroad. It is Robbie and Rexroad, 1025, 1063, the game.
When you got out of that fourth inning, you were pretty fired up. What did that moment mean to you? And then, Tony, when you took Xander out, you ran off the field pretty quickly. Why did you want to vacate the scene the way that you did?
Well, going into the fourth, I had a couple pitches that I thought were there, which is okay. I'm just competing out there, and luckily enough, I didn't get ahead of myself. I relaxed and was able to get the guy out, but it fired me up. I mean, bases loaded, you know, two outs, and putting a zero up on the board is something that a pitcher would like.
It looked like Jimmy Connors coming off the field that one time. He doesn't know who he is, but I'll send him the GIF or JIF or whatever. And then Loy was throwing like a madman down there, and he had got passed up. He was going to be further down, so I was trying to get back down there to tell him to stop throwing. So not the sexiest answer in the world there, but short one. The long one and the short one combined.
Vols back in Omaha. A little bit of their post-game press conference yesterday. Chase McCabe in for Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad, who is in Knoxville. And Joe, I will say this. He just referenced Jimmy Connors and goes, oh, yeah, he doesn't know who that is. You're going to love this. We have a giveaway. Nick Keyser just asked me during the break, who is Alanis Morissette?
What? Oh, my God.
I'm like, it's a pretty big deal there.
Wow. Man, that's tough. I mean, you know, those both. I was going to say both in the 90s, although Jimmy Connors was even barely like in the 90s. I think the big like U.S. Open where he had like that swan song was maybe like 90 or 91. But yeah, Alanis Morissette, I mean, she was still making like music like in the 2000s, right?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Heyday was certainly the 90s, but.
Yes. But like Jagged Little Pill was like 1995. But yeah, I mean, come on, Keyser.
Right. And like, I was young. That was kind of before my time, but I obviously, you know, got into her music later, you know, or know her music later. So, but that's okay.
She was also a great actor on You Can't Do That on Television on Nickelodeon. So that's where I aged myself. Yes.
Okay, there you
go. We get slimed. You know what I'm talking about. You get slimed. Yeah. When you say, I don't know, you get slimed. There we go.
Yep, I do.
Alanis, that's where she got to start.
I do remember that for sure. 615-737-1025. Talking about the Vols back in Omaha once again. So who would you say, what team would you say gives them the biggest threat?
So you look at the bracket. I mean, to me, that question every year in Omaha, like I just look at a team's side of the bracket because the other side of the bracket is the SEC side, right?
Yeah.
In fact, the other side of the bracket might be, yeah. So I'm wrong, actually. I said it wrong earlier. So the SEC already has four, could have five, and if that's the case, the other side of the bracket is just the SEC tournament battle royale to get to the final. So we know that Florida, Texas A&M are going to play each other. And if you're asking me just of the whole field, I would probably pick one of those two teams. And I know Florida has not had a great season, but you watch that game yesterday against Clemson, incredibly wild, crazy game. Jack Caglione is a tremendous talent. They still have tons of talent. Texas A&M is loaded. Those teams are going to play each other to start, and then it's Kentucky against either Georgia or NC State. I mean, it'd be pretty wild if it's just all SEC. But I put that side to the side, right? I mean, can the Vols get to the final series? And if they do, they're going to play one of those teams that I just mentioned, right? So the wild thing, Chase, about the College World Series this year is, like last year, for example, so the Vols had to go take on Paul Skeens in LSU, and Paul Skeens is already awesome in MLB. You know, it's just, yeah, that was a super team for LSU. How wild is it, by the way? We're talking about this this SEC Invitational, and LSU is not one of those teams. You know, that's one of the teams you expect to be there, but a super team. They also they beat Stanford and Quinn Matthews, who was an ace and a big time pro prospect. You look at MLB.com's top 200 pro prospects. There is not a single pitcher on Tennessee's side of this bracket. In fact, wow. The only pitcher ranked ahead of Drew Beam as a prospect is Ryan Prager from Texas A&M on the other side of the bracket. So what that tells me is, I mean, this is just an incredible opportunity for Tennessee. They don't have any pitchers who are overpowering. All the best players in this College World Series are offensive players. And there are some great ones still on this side. In fact, you know, Cam Smith, third baseman for Florida State, and James Tibbs, these are both first-round picks. And so, like, they're going to have their hands full with some of these teams' offenses. Virginia is loaded with great hitters up and down the lineup. Big-time challenge for not the most powerful team, but big-time challenge for any pitching staff. Griff O'Farrell, the shortstop, could be a first-round pick. Ethan Anderson, catcher, first baseman, another guy who, you know, Casey Sock, Harrison Didowick, outfielders for Virginia. So, like, that would be – I'd look at them, I guess, just in terms of a deep lineup that's going to challenge your pitching staff. Again, Florida State has big-time stars. But I look at Tennessee and, you know, they've got pro prospects all over their roster, and they've got – it is different. You know, you move on from Lindsey Nelson Stadium to Omaha. We've seen it before. You know, these teams, Tennessee teams that hit home runs, all of a sudden those are warning track shots in Omaha. But without the dominant pitching in the way, I think that they have a chance to just outscore the teams on their side of the bracket.
Yeah, I do too. And, you know, you bring up the, you know, moving to Omaha and not having Lindsey Nelson Stadium. He knows that. Tony Vitello knows that. And so I'm wondering if he's kind of changed his philosophy on how you know, kind of work on that. And I mean, it's all about just kind of getting into a rhythm and feel and stuff like that. So I wonder if he's kind of tried to think, you know, and obviously you can't go and practice in Omaha in the middle of the year, but how he can try and combat that. And maybe you can't combat that. I don't know. But I'm sure that that's something that he has thought of, you know, obviously before now, having been there before.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they're all of a sudden going to start playing a bunch of small ball. I mean, right. Built. Look, I mean, Christian Moore, Blake Burke, you know, that's the top two in your order. Those guys can hit home runs in any baseball stadium you'd like to put them in, you know. So, I mean, I think it's just a matter of – maybe at times, and I do think, in fact, I really thought Saturday there were at times some at bats where it's like, you know what, you need to shorten up that swing a little bit. And, cause at Lindsey Nelson, you elevate something and you got a good chance. So maybe hitting approach in different situations needs to change, in a place like Omaha. But as far, I mean, look, they're built for what they are. They have an outside chance to be the all-time record holder. I think they're 15 behind LSU, which hit 188 homers in 1997. So, I mean, you know, you almost have to go to the loser's bracket for that to happen.
Yeah. And they hope they don't do that.
Yeah. I guess maybe not. I suppose they could, you know, you roll through and you have a three-game final series and you got a chance to do it. But, I mean, that's how they're built. It's what they are. That's what the sport is now. I mean, at this, you know, baseball goes through phases with dead ball, whatever, bats, things. I mean, right now it's a home run year. So, I mean, to me, if they're going to win it, they're going to win it hitting moonshots in Omaha too.
Well, and with that said, like it's not an easy championship to win by any means. There are a lot of good teams that are going to Omaha. And, you know, we all know that. And so the competition is going to be stiff. But with that said, how surprised would you be if they went and they didn't lose a game at all? And they just, I'm not going to say cruise, but they just methodically dominate in Omaha and become the first seed since 1999, first number one overall seed since 1999 to win it all.
Well, I'd be surprised. They could do it, but I'd be surprised. It's just, you know, again, it's like the flip side of this is the good thing is they don't, they're not going to take on some ace who's going to, you know, throw 125 pitches and hold them to three hits over eight innings. You know, that's not going to happen. But they, like we've said, like Drew Beam has had some rough outings lately, and he's their ace, and they need him to be great. Xander Seacrest just pitched a game of his life last night, but you know, their other three, they're going to start Xander Seacrest in a game, and then you know, their Friday starter has become Chris Stamos, you know, making way for AJ Causey. You know, they are also not going to dominate on the mound. You know, they need Drew Beam to dominate on the mound. I mean, if they get that, then your scenario I think is possible. But they're going to get into some games, you know, some back and forth games. I think this College World Series in general is going to be a lot more 10-8 kind of games than 3-2 kind of games. So if you're a coach going into something like this, you'd rather just have aces, right? Which Tennessee has had in past years, like guys you expect to go seven innings, than anything else, because that's the best way you can control a game. So this is going to be some wild baseball, probably a lot like we saw with Clemson, Florida State yesterday, and like we saw with the Vols, Evansville on Saturday.
Coming up next, we're going to shift into some hockey as the game two of the Stanley Cup final tonight between Edmonton and Florida. And one team with local interests has their season come to an end. And I know Rex Road was paying attention to that, but We will discuss that, and if any of those guys with Milwaukee, if we're going to be talking about them next year with the Predators. It's Robbie and Rex Road, Chase McCabe in today for Robbie Stanley. Purchase your tickets now for the Music City Grand Prix at Nashville Super Speedway Friday, September 13th through Sunday, September 15th, simply by going to musiccitygp.com as your racing station. We have a special offer for you for a limited time. Just use the promo code GAME for a 20% discount now through June 16th. When you check out.
What's something that you learned about yourself as a coach this season as opposed to other seasons?
Winning's hard, right? So it's difficult. You grind, you try, you do everything you can. I think this group did really well this year. You know, there's so many positives with this group. But when you lose, you're always going to look back at things and analyze. Not doing that today. But our staff has been excellent. You know, Greg Rellin, Scott Ford, Ryan Stacey, Jason Barron. It's an unbelievable staff. And then we have Ryan Costello booking flights, canceling flights. This guy is, like, unbelievable how he organizes everything for us. So our staff is strong here. We have a great organization. I think I've learned that I'm really protected and supported by the people around me, and that's the staff. But also, look at the season. Look at the tickets we sold this year. The front office was awesome. We're up 1,500 fans a game. It's huge. Next year, we'll go up another 1,500. We're going to carve a niche out here. We're going to get this rink sold out next year every game.
Carl Taylor, Milwaukee Admirals head coach, after their season comes to an end, 5-1 to Coachella Valley. Chase, I knew I was going to say it. I almost said it. Chasing Joe. That's accurate. Robbie and Rex Road, Chase McCabe in for Robbie Stanley today alongside Joe Rex Road. So their season comes to an end. It's game two of the Stanley Cup final tonight. And we bring up the Admirals because now we can truly, and we've done this here in Nashville, but now you can start looking at next season for the Predators and who can make an impact. And, you know, of the guys that were in the playoffs, that were on this roster, to me, Joe, Spencer Stastny is the only one that I can write in ink that is going to be on the Nashville Predators roster next year. Feel free to disagree, but that's what I have right now. I think Parsonen probably will be back, but is a question mark. I think Tomasino, they're going to give him every chance possible, but I would not put him in ink. Zach LaRue's one that everybody's watching. I know Kimmel, you know, everybody's watching. Askarov being, you know, benched for Grosnick kind of makes me think that they know he's just not ready yet. And so while I believe you'll see him at times, I wouldn't, you know, pencil him in as the backup just yet. So Stastny for me is the one that I can put down in ink.
I agree with all that, man. I will say though, if they get to the point where they sign Soros to the extension, and they lock him in, and they don't move Askarov. And you know, I mean, moving him right now, I don't know what the yield would be on that. Man, it seems like you would hope he'd be able to handle a season as the backup, right? And that you could move him. I understand that he just got benched. I mean, I don't know all that went into that. I think he has been a bit banged up. Up and obviously, you know, he's got to mature. There's no doubt about
that. That's
the
big thing.
I think that would be pretty disappointing, wouldn't it? If they have to go out and I'm sure it would be to him,
sure,
to be in Milwaukee again. I don't know. I mean, I know it's small sample sizes, but when we've seen him have an opportunity, to me, he looks like a guy who, like, by next year should be ready to be a backup goalie in the NHL. At least you'd have a year of that situation with him and Soros.
I want to see him have one hell of an offseason. I want to see him, you know, do the right things, be working out. Obviously, take your break, deserve a break. You got to let your body heal, all those things. But then come into training camp like you're fighting for the number one job, even though we know that if they bring Soros back, that's not the case. And I do believe they're going to bring Soros back. I mean, Barry Trotz has been, as we know, he can be an open book. He's made several comments that seem to support the idea that he wants to re-sign UC Soros to a long-term deal. How long of a term that is, I don't know. A long-term for David Poile was the max 8 years. His long-term for Barry Trotz, 5 years, and will the player want to take that?
You know, well, he won't take it.
Right. No, I don't think he would take that either. But, you know, he could also go through the summer and go into the season without a contract, and then you kind of go from there. But time will tell. But I agree. I mean, you want him to be the backup, but he's still incredibly young, and you used the key word there. He's got to mature. And I, you know, I think that he's been that player that's had that, like, hey, I've outgrown the minors. I'm ready to be in the bigs and be up in the NHL. When the coaches all know that, no, that's not true. You're not ready. You're not. Maybe you're outplaying, and he had a streak where he was outplaying the AHL, but mentally he wasn't there yet. And they knew that, and they know that. And Barry Trotz is going to overcook a guy. The other thing that I think is going to be huge, and people may not realize this yet, especially if they weren't around, Mitch Korn is going to play a huge role in this. And that's why I think Barry Trotz wants to figure out how to keep Soros and also continue to develop Askarov and give Mitch Korn and Pekarinen, you put him in this, time to work their magic.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's certainly a big factor to get Mitch Korn, and I get all that. I do. But again, like, to me, if you do this long-term deal, and I'm with you. I mean, I think Barry Trotz wants to sign him. It's just a matter of, will the two sides come together, right?
Yeah.
But I'm still going to have a huge problem with the idea of if they do sign this deal with Soros, and then it's just – and now you're just going to let Askarov come along. Because, look, I hear you on overcooking, and so if he's not ready this year, it's another year in Milwaukee, fine. But, like, he's not, you know, what are you going to do 2, 3, 4 years from now? He's just going to be your backup, or you're going to split time? You're going to split time with a goalie making $8 million a year over 7, which is about where Soros is going to be? That's
no,
where
you're,
I just...
you're going to have to move one, you know, by that time. But, and look, I have been adamant, just like you guys, that this is not the same situation as Soros and Rene, because Rene was older than yes. Soros, and so it certainly makes it a different situation. Now, what I could see happening next year, you know, whether Soros is signed or not, you know, he's still going to be on the team, I think. You could do a situation like when Soros first came up, that he'd come up for a handful of games, he'd, you know, get a couple starts, you know, usually on back-to-backs, and then when there was a long gap where he wasn't going to be playing, he'd go back to Milwaukee. They had another goalie that they could call up without having to put through waivers that was basically the warm body on the bench. That could certainly be I actually think that would be the likely scenario for the Predators next year. He needs to play. And if you're going to ride Soros, like, yes, I think they're going to do, then you get that third goalie that can be your fringe guy. And when there's a long stretch where you know Askarov isn't going to play, then you let him go to Milwaukee where he can get some minutes.
Yeah. No, that makes sense.
And Grossman could be that guy. I don't know.
I mean, yeah, maybe. It feels like they'd probably go sign someone, but maybe. But regardless, look, it's a risk, but I mean, there is a case to be made. You know, if it doesn't come together this summer and there's a gap between the sides, we saw this with Forsberg. I mean, it's a risk, but you could go into next year and then you get the information of, okay, first of all, how does Saros play? I mean, his numbers last year were the worst of his career since he's been a starter, right? I think we saw the real Saros second half of the year, but still, how does he play? What does that do to his potential value? How does that make you feel about him moving forward? And then you also get that more information on Askarov. And, you know, you have the trading deadline and things like that. I mean, there is a case to be made for using next year to gather more information and help pick a direction, because I do think you have to pick a direction.
I agree with that. We'll continue this discussion and much more in hour number two. Chase McCabe in for Robbie Stanley today here on Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.